Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about Action Comics number 1010, number 1010. It's from Brian Michael Bendis. We have art by Steve Epting. The colors are by Brad Anderson, and the letters are by Josh Reed. So if you remember at the end of Action Comics 1009, Lois and Superman had decided they were going to go undercover. They pulled out some crazy kryptonite that altered their appearances, which I guess cool. If you're Bendis, you want to play with all the toys. It's a little Silver Age-y for me. It's a little, really? Is this what we're doing? I don't know. I didn't really like it as a plot point, but you know, it's not the the worst thing in the world. This Leviathan Rising story has been kind of all over the place. And, you know, from the beginning, it's been clear that Bendis has been trying to turn the Action Comics title into a crime noir, Superman crime noir. And I've talked before about how I'm not sure how successful that is as a concept, but it's what he's doing. It's the path he's taking. And Superman in the world of spies. Yeah. Just not really buying it. Same thing with the whole invisible mafia gang that he's got going on in this same title. You know, I just feel like he's Superman. And if you say that there's been this crime organization, this invisible mafia that's been operating in Metropolis under his nose for years and years and years, it diminishes him as a character. I know he's not supposed to be this super great detective. You know, that's Batman's thing. And that's the reason I have a problem with the Court of Owls. But again, it's a cool concept. But that's neither here nor there. When we talk about Superman, yeah, he's not the best detective. You know, he's not the world's greatest detective. But Clark Kent's a smart guy. He still can figure things out. And I'm just not buying that there was this secret organization, the Invisible Mafia, operating under his nose in Metropolis for all these years. His powers of observation, his senses are too enhanced. They're too good. I don't buy it. So it's kind of the same thing with this Leviathan. I understand it's kind of coming out of nowhere and taking him, you know, off guard, but I just don't think it would take him that long to figure out what's going on. But, you know, for the purposes of Bendis' story, it needs to. But I, you know, as much as I have a problem with what Bendis is doing over in Superman for different reasons, the Superman title, at least it was cosmic. At least it was super heroic. At least in my mind, it suited the character a little more than what he's doing here. But anyway, let's dive into the issue. Like I said, at the end of issue 1009, Clark and Lois had exposed themselves to this, I don't know, what you would want to call it, decoy kryptonite, incognito kryptonite, this kryptonite that somehow changed their appearance and in such a way that they can control it. That's the part that really gets me, right? Like, we had other kryptonite in the past, gold kryptonite, rainbow kryptonite, blue kryptonite. I mean, back in the Silver Age, it was so many different kinds that DC at some point was like, no more kryptonite. Like, stop, right? It's gotten to be too confusing. There's polka dot kryptonite and zebra kryptonite, and they just got rid of it. And when John Byrne rebooted, he said, okay, there's only one kind of kryptonite. It's just a regular old green kryptonite, and that's it. And then over the years, different writers have brought in other kryptonites. You know, it's that whole writer's creep and editorial starts loosening their restrictions because writers want to tell the story they want to tell. And I totally get that. And it's valid to some extent. But here's the thing. Even when it was the different kind of kryptonites that I think there was one that every time Superman was exposed to it, it would affect him in a different way. It would change his powers in a different way, transform him in a different way. It was never a situation where it was predictive, right? You couldn't control it. And so the biggest problem I have with this kryptonite that Bendis has created here is that not only does it change the appearance of Clark, who's a Kryptonian, it also changes the appearance of Lois, but she's human. So we've never seen kryptonite really affect a human before, except for Lex Luthor, who got cancer from wearing it on his hand for, you know, decades. That's a far cry from it actually affecting a human. And even beyond that, like, forgetting about the fact that it's affecting Lois, who's not Kryptonian, the fact that it's affecting Superman, it's affecting Clark, I can buy that. But how is it affecting him the same way every time? And I don't mean how's it changing his appearance every time. It's not only changing his appearance, it's changing his appearance in the exact same way every time so he can go undercover as this Chaz person. It's not like he uses it one time and Chaz is like a ginger with red hair and freckles. And then the next time he uses it, Chaz is, you know, Middle Eastern with dark curly hair. And the next time Chaz is some Caucasian guy with blue eyes and blonde hair, because that would be more in keeping with what Kryptonite normally does. It's unpredictable. So I don't know. Are you saying that Superman is super intelligent as well? And he was able to create this artificial Kryptonite that could change his appearance the same way and make him look the exact same way every time he uses it. And it affects Lois. Okay. Then you're saying Superman is a really, really smart guy. And I'm even fine with that, right? Super intelligence. Why not? But then I'm going to go back to my first point, which was, then how the heck is he having a hard time finding out who Leviathan is? And how the heck is he having a hard time discovering the invisible mafia has been operating under his nose in Metropolis all along if he's this smart of a guy? You can't have it both ways. And that's been the biggest problem for me with Bendis's Superman. He wants to tell these stories and he wants to use these ideas. And even though they're a little incongruous, they don't make sense. He just wants to use them. And the whole story becomes this exercise in ex deus machina. Well, why can it happen this way? Because Bendis wants it to happen this way. And that's where I have a problem. It's just not consistent. It doesn't make any sense. And it's one thing to say, okay, well, you know, continuity wise, there's problems this way or that way or whatever. That's one thing. But you're not even being true to the character himself in a way, because you're not even the narrative itself. If you write yourself into a corner, you just pull out this, here's this crazy kryptonite that's going to save the day. Or you have this idea, and because you think it's cool, like, hey, Superman's going to go undercover as a spy, you're just going to use it, even though narratively it doesn't, like logically, it doesn't make any sense. So that's where I kind of have the problem. So anyway, I keep saying I'm going to get to the story and then I go off on another rant, but here we go. We're getting into the story now. We also know in 1009, that issue of Action Comics, that the DEO was attacked by Leviathan and destroyed. So this issue actually opens up. We see Mr. Bones. He's sitting at a desk in what looks like some kind of a interrogation room. He's got a paper there, a pen. I don't know if he's supposed to be writing some sort of confession or just some sort of statement about what's happening. And all of a sudden, Kate Spencer shows up, says, you know, I'm sorry for what you've been through. Can you tell me what happened? And Bones is really taken aback. He's like, wait, Kate Spencer, I know you. What are you doing here? She's like, well, I know you need a lawyer, and a friend of a friend called me. And Bones is immediately suspicious. He's like, huh, for a second there, I thought you were one of them come to finish the job. And Bones is thinking, because, you know, that's what I would do. And Kate Spencer's like, well, we've met, you know me. He's like, I remember. So again, she reiterates, I need you to tell me exactly what happened to the DEO, because the press is kind of forming their own story and it's not reflecting kind on you. And he's like, narrative in the press, I don't care. Who gives a crap about the narrative in the press? Like he cares about the fact that his organization that he's given his life to has been destroyed. And so Spencer's like, well, the truth cares. They told me you're rescued by Adam Strange, like Adam Strange from outer space. And again, Bones is like suspicious. Like, why is she probing for these details? Why does it matter? Why does she need to know? He's like, yeah, he just showed up, kind of just like you. All these people keep showing up, and yet the people I trusted, the people in the DEO, my friends, they're all dead. And you know, people that just show up out of the blue, you know what we call them in law enforcement? We call them suspects. So how many? She's like, how many suspects? No, how many people at the DEO died today under my protection? Like he has taken this really, really hard. You know, he Bones has always been a really arrogant guy and a guy that thinks he has all the answers and a guy that doesn't suffer fools. But one thing you can't say is that he wasn't dedicated. And clearly he's showing a side to himself here. The fact that he cared so much about his people, he never showed that outwardly. But the way he's reacting, you realize how much he really did care for the organization, did believe you know, he always came across as a little bit of a zealot to me in terms of he wanted power and he wanted the answers because that made him like the big guy. But it's clear that he believed in his mission and he cared about the people that worked at the DEO. So it's interesting to see. I do like that Bendis is introducing this sort of different side to Bones that we haven't seen before. It humanizes him a little bit, even if the guy is just a walking skeleton. So anyway, Kate's like, I don't know how many died. They're still sifting through it. Do you have any idea who was? Was it Adam Strange? And Bones said he's made up his mind. He's like, you know exactly who it was. Where am I, Kate Spencer? And she says, well, you're in this debriefing area outside the disaster zone. And shows a picture of this outline of this kind of hulking behemoth that showed up and attacked the DEO. Same one we saw attack Cobra in previous issues. And she says, is this the thing that did it? And Bones, he's ignoring her questions and just wants answers to his own. Well, how did I get here? How did I get to this debriefing area? And she says, okay, I can see you're not going to answer my questions. We'll just have somebody come in and check on you. You've been through a lot. He says, well, why are you doing that? She's like, well, you've been through traumatic. It's like, no. Why did you kill all my people? Like Bones is, like I said, his mind is made up. He knows that this is not the real Kate Spencer. And she says, Bones, like, no, you are not Kate Spencer. You're just here to clean up your mess. You just want to see how much we know and you know, what we felt and what we might've thought and suspected before you put me down for good. This is your big play, right? And you don't leave that to some underling. So it's you. You're the one that did this. You're the architect of this royal flush. And they stare at each other for a minute. And Kate starts to smirk. And Bones is like, I have powers. You know, I can understand. And Kate's response is, but I have purpose. And she leaves. And we see her climb. He's actually in the back of this mobile debriefing, this like armored car. And she jumps out the back. And to cover her escape, she yells out, he's having a heart attack. Be careful. We know his skin is poison. Call 911 or something. And she runs out as all the emergency personnel head to the armored car so that Bones is not able to follow her. And we do see as she walks away that her face does change. And she really proof that it wasn't Kate Spencer. So meanwhile, over the skies of London, the disguise Superman and Lois are flying, and Lois is saying, oh, London, man, it's like I'm Peter Panning. And Superman's like, well, technically I'm the one. She's like, okay, yeah. I'm Wendy. It's fine. But what I don't understand about this art, and I have the line work, technically great art by Steve Epting. But what I don't understand, and I have to imagine that these are instructions from Bendis, because again, he wants it to be the way he wants it to be. Superman is flying, but he's Chaz. And Lois is there as well. And they're both in their disguises. But the way it's drawn, Lois is much higher than Superman. Superman is only holding her hand. And yet she's not just, you know, falling down from gravity where, you know, she's below him. No, she's above him. If anything, it looks like she's flying up and pulling him up. And there's a couple scenes like this in the first couple pages where it looks like Lois is the one that has the ability to fly and Superman doesn't. And I always have a problem with this whenever I see it. And it's not just in comics, because as much as I absolutely adore the Richard Donner Superman movies, especially the first one that I saw when I was like 40 years old, there's the whole scene where Superman's flying around and he just has Margot Kidder just by the hand and she's like flying too. That's not a thing. He doesn't have the ability to make other people fly. He can carry you. If he has you close to him, you can fly with him. Like at the beginning of that scene, where he has Margot Kidder hugged close to his body, I'm totally fine with that. But when we see this kind of thing, where it's like he can extend this field of anti-gravity or this field of extending his flight powers, like Faith from the Harbinger title over at Valiant, that's a different thing altogether. As far as I know, Superman's never had that power. So it just doesn't make any sense. They need to be swapped. Like Superman needs to be the one in the above where Lois is, and Lois needs to be the one below so that it makes sense, because the way that it's set up here, it doesn't. She can't fly. He flies, not her. So I just don't get it. And as far as the, oh, London, I'm Peter Panning, whatever. I mean, Bendis thinks he's being funny or cute or wants to make his little jokes, then whatever. But Yeah, I just had a problem with it. And even when they land on the roof, it's the same thing. Superman lands first, Lois is still up in the air. It does not make any sense. And, you know, Lois is even making a pose like, hold on, I did this in high school when I played, you know, Peter Pan in high school. I was in the play. And Clark's like, well, you're having fun tonight. And this is, I guess this is Bendis trying to show the relationship. And I do like it a little bit, except for the fact that you want to talk about things that don't make sense. Over in the Superman title, he had taken their relationship apart. You know, he had gotten rid of a lot of the trust that they had. So I'm not sure why he's coming back here and wanting to show how close they are. Now, you talked about how their relationship was different. They had this, you almost made it seem like they had this open relationship. They were living separate lives because that's what they had to do because nobody's lives were like theirs. I never understood why he did that. And I don't understand here why he's trying. It's not that he's trying to walk it back, but I don't even know what he's trying to do. Maybe that's the problem and why this comes across as so insincere. Like this is their closeness here. Their clear feelings that they have for each other is so out of context with everything else that Bendis has written about Lois and Clark in this, his whole run. So I don't know. It just bugs me. So anyway, Superman says, yeah, you're having fun tonight. She's like, listen, undercover Clark, Chaz, right? I mean, Lois would know that. You don't, guy's undercover. You're not going to call him by his regular name. Okay, listen, if all the government agencies are falling and this is our last hurrah, I'm not going to let an impromptu Peter Pan moment slip by. Again, why? Like this is supposed to be Bendis showing how great he is at dialogue, like people always say. I've never felt so, but whatever. Superman says, you love undercover work. And they basically get to the point where, yeah, but Superman doesn't because it's lying and you don't do that, you know, pretending to be an agent of Spiral. Almost feel like this is Bendis because he's laid little hints like this throughout his run. And maybe that's what he always wanted to do because he always knew he was going to have Superman reveal his secret identity because Superman doesn't lie. And that's just the way that Bendis sees it. I don't agree with that either. It's been done before. It's not original. It's very derivative. And I get that it's sort of lying to everybody, but at the same time, I don't think Superman could be who he is if he has to spend all his time protecting Lois and his mom and his dad and his friends and Daily Planet. And it just, it doesn't, again, it's something that just narratively doesn't make sense. Lois also asked for him to take a peek in on his father, on her father, rather. We know he's been hurt in the Spiral attack. He's fine. And so they say, okay, here we go. We're going to go find whoever this is, that's our Spiral contact. And then Lois is talking again about how much she likes undercover and how Clark doesn't. And Clark even says, I should do this alone. And she's like, no. And if that's the case, then why'd you bring her along? Like, what's the point of you saying that? You brought her along. She's in disguise. You know she's going to get her way. Why do you bother saying that? And then for some reason, Lois is like, no, you can't do it alone. Hey, when did we make these IDs? Because again, we're just going to throw out this random question. He says, Nemesis. Oh, that's right, Nemesis. And I guess this little exchange, hey, when did we make these IDs, Nemesis? It's just so on the next page, we could have this two-page spread by Steve Epting that just wastes 2 pages because it doesn't have anything to do with the story, doesn't have anything to do with Leviathan, doesn't have anything to do with anything other than tell us about some time previous that they used these identities where the Penguin is so... The double page spread, there's a picture in the middle or a big giant splash in the middle with the Penguin flying away in a helicopter. And then on either side are all these people that apparently were involved in Nemesis, whatever that was. And it's almost like a title page because we get DC Comics proudly presents Checkmate in the Nemesis of my Nemesis is my Nemesis. So again, I guess it's just Bendis. Whoa, this would be a story I would have told. Maybe this is a story I'll flash back and tell it sometime. I don't care, Bendis. This is not Superman. Superman is not a spy. Superman is not a Checkmate story. Like, why are you wasting 2 pages on this? And then we get the people that are involved on the sides. Michael Holt, Mr. Terrific, White King. Amanda Waller, White Queen. Okay, Amanda Waller would never be White Queen because that's the good guys, first of all. Nemesis is White Queen's Bishop. Count Vertigo, White King's Knight, which again, that's not a thing because Count Vertigo's a bad guy. Always has been, will never be on the side of angels. On the other side, we have Clark Kent, Agent of Spiral, Lois Lane, Agent of Spiral, Tiger, Agent of Spiral, Supergirl on standby, and Kate Kane, Director of Spiral. And the splash shows, as I said, Penguin flying away in a helicopter, Nemesis is knocked out, laying on the ground. And he's holding Aquaman's trident for some reason. Superman and Lois, or Clark and Lois, are in their disguises of Chaz and Andy, and they're tied up to this pole. And Lois is saying, "Oh, look, now we know who's behind the council. This looks like a job for Superman, Chaz. Like, hey, you better change." And he's like, "Oh, no, no, Superman called in a friend, Andy, and that's why Supergirl's there." So, again, I don't understand why this page is here, just because, oh, we created these identities when we were handling the Nemesis affair, and you waste two pages showing us about the nemesis of my nemesis is my nemesis. Again, because why? It's not fun. It's just dumb. And it's wasting pages. And you're already not really pacing the comic very well, Bendis. So why would you want to waste a couple pages? There's not much that happens in this issue to begin with. So to, like, maybe that's why. I don't really have enough for this whole issue. Let me throw in a splash page about a previous mission they did when they were undercover. And we'll call it something stupid like the nemesis of my nemesis is my nemesis. I just don't get it. It's things like this that just make me like cringe during Bendis's run. And I try to give him the benefit of the doubt. And as time's gone by, I have softened a little bit on my dislike of it, just trying to take it for what it is. Okay, well, yeah, maybe it doesn't suit Superman. Maybe he wasn't the right choice, but he's who we had and these stories exist. So just try to read them for what they are and get as much enjoyment as we can out of them. Don't think too much about the fact that, you know, crime noir Superman stories don't really work, at least not at the power level he's at now. And just, again, try to enjoy them for what they're worth. But when he does stuff like this, you know, when he does stuff like Lois is the one flying and not Superman, that's not, okay, well, it's a bad idea and it never should have been done. That's, okay, this is messing up the story. This is not a good story. Like, it doesn't make sense within the context of the story. This doesn't make sense in the context of pacing. It's just dumb. So anyway, they do eventually get to the bookstore where they're meeting their contact from Spiral. Meanwhile, a lot of exposition from Bendis talking about, well, we left Jimmy Olsen in the Fortress of Solitude with Amanda Waller. That's, you know, not a good idea. Maybe Spiral is Leviathan. Again, it's just a lot of words from Bendis to kind of give us exposition, make sure we understand all the stuff that he's trying to tell us or wants us to know in case we can't think of it for ourselves, I guess. The scene then shifts back to the aforementioned Fortress of Solitude. We see Amanda Waller there. She's talking to Kelix saying, okay, this is the Fortress of Solitude. You run it for Superman. He's like, yes, yes, yes. She's like, okay, respect. Can I leave? He's like, well, no, we have you here under protection. She asks, am I a prisoner? He said, well, no, but you're in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, so I'm not really sure where you think you would go, Amanda Waller, who's a terrible character, as always. And she's like, okay, well, stop taking my picture, Olsen. And Jimmy Olsen's there taking the picture, like, what, me? And props to Jimmy for not putting up with her crap. He just does what he wants to do. She's got no authority over him to make him stop doing anything. And she's like, oh, did you just Daily Planet paparazzi me here? Well, I guess this is my fault. And then he accuses her of being Leviathan. You're Leviathan, aren't you? You tricked Superman into bringing you here. Well, you bring the world to its knees, but you're safe here. And she just gives him a dirty look. That may be the only time I've liked Amanda Waller in recent memory. It's just Jimmy's just, again, not putting up with her crap, calling it like he sees it. And she just gives him like the look of death. So that, I mean, it's totally super villain. So maybe that's why I enjoy it. A true Amanda Waller moment there. So anyway, meanwhile, Clark and Lois show up at the bookstore, and Lois, again, Ben is trying to be funny or humorous with the dialogue. She's talking about how have you never brought me here before? This is like the greatest bookstore in the world. I may never leave. It's not necessary. I don't get it. It's not good characterization for Lois. Just anyway. Superman looks around. He sees that the stacks are lead lined, and one of the bookcases swings back, and it turns out it's Tiger from Spiral. And they sort of spend a few panels accusing each other back and forth. You know, all of a sudden the world's secret organizations have been targeted, and then you call me, Chaz. We've been looking for you all year, and all of a sudden when the world's on fire, you show up. Maybe you're behind it. and Superman saying, hey, you promised that I'd be safe. Maybe you're behind it, blah, blah, blah. Again, just a lot of extraneous dialogue. It's not necessary. We do see that it's Tiger from Spiral, and Superman's like, who's behind the royal flush? How do we get out of this? And Tiger's response is, who said it was a royal flush? He's like, the news? Maybe open your eyes, look around. All the secret organizations are being attacked. What else would you want to call it? And Tiger's like, your eyes are lying. And we know that his eyes are lying because Tiger can apparently see that because he's not really Chaz. He's Superman. And, you know, he's wants to protect Lois. Like, okay, you're holding a gun on us. I called you for help. But if you don't have help, then we got to go. So Tiger's like, okay, let me put my gun down, give you the benefit of the doubt. He's like, do you know that Spiral was originally created to spy on superheroes? Superman says, yeah, of course I did. He's like, okay, well, you only spy on something because you think it's the enemy. But that whole premise is false because Leviathan was originally created by the same guy that created Spiral just so we'd always have something to do. And Superman's like, wait, what? I thought it was Talia al Ghul that created Leviathan. He's like, no, she inherited it just like everything else. And I've found out in the last couple of days that I dedicated my whole life to this ideal that was nothing but a rich person's shell game. Spiral guy created Spiral to make sure to keep an eye on superheroes and keep them in check. But if everything was going okay in that realm, then Spiral wouldn't have a reason to exist. And so in order for him to make sure that Spiral continued to exist, he created Leviathan to always be this sort of clandestine, malevolent, shadowy organization that would always give a reason for Spiral to exist. And the Tiger's like, man, imagine what we could actually accomplish. Imagine the good we could actually do if we were fighting actual problems instead of these, you know, these made up organizations that have, you know, admittedly morphed into actual real problems. So as they're having this conversation, all of a sudden Superman says, get in the panic room and close the door. And Lois is like, what is it? Well, what it is that behemoth, that giant robotic looking, dreadnought, it almost looks like, if you want to borrow a term from Marvel. So it has showed up outside this bookstore. And so as the panic room door is closing, Chaz starts to take his shirt off, and Tiger sees that Chaz is Superman. He's like, wait, Chaz has been Superman this whole time? Meanwhile, Superman grabs the dreadnought, flies it up into space, pulls some glowing sphere out from the middle of it, and then hurls both of them away and they explode. So don't know if that was just – maybe Superman doesn't pull the sphere. That's what it looks like. But maybe it's just that's the explosion that destroys all this big blue light that comes out of the middle of the machine. I think maybe that's what it might be. But the way it's drawn, it certainly looks like he's pulling it out. So regardless of that, Superman does take this thing into outer space, throw it away, and it explodes and flies back to the safe room where Tiger's still trying to come to grips with the fact that Chaz is Superman this entire time. But by the time Superman gets back there, he's calling out Lois. Hey, I just found an enormous clue. Lois. He opens rips the panic room door off of the secret room, rips that particular bookcase off, and it's empty. We see Tiger's laptop is still there. So's the bottle of booze and the glass that he was drinking out of, but she's gone. And Superman's yelling out, Lois, which, hey, way to really, you know, keep that secret identity. Why did she bother to disguise herself as Andy? You're just going to call out Lois. And we get the blurb for next issue, Leviathan revealed. So we do know that Spiral has teleportation technology. So not a huge surprise there that they would have disappeared. And clearly, if this dreadnought showed up there, this Leviathan, you know, machine or mechanism, then Tiger knows that that's no longer a safe spot. And why wouldn't he leave? So the other thing that I should mention is when apparently when that dreadnought exploded in space, it somehow reversed the effects of the kryptonite that caused Superman to be disguised as Chaz. And I guess we do see one panel from Epting where the kind of the shockwave of blue energy is brushing and rushing past his face. And I guess we're supposed to think that this disguise of this incognito kryptonite or whatever the hell you want to call it created, it didn't actually like change on a cellular level or molecular level what Superman's appearance actually looked like. Instead, it just sort of created a mask over him, like, I don't know, Mission Impossible or something. And so this blast basically scoured it off, and Superman now looks like Superman by the time he flies back to the bookstore. So I don't know, I guess that works. So, I mean, the line works great. Steve Epting's a very incredible artist. A lot of his stuff's pretty photorealistic. I know some people don't like that, don't think it works for a Superman comic. And normally I would sort of agree with that, except for the fact that, like I said before, it is really not a Superman story. It's really crime noir that just happens to have Superman in it. So it does work, because I think Epting's art is perfect for crime noir. And I mean, I guess if that's the story Bendis wants to tell, again, try to make the best of it. And he does keep sort of the superheroics to a minimum. Pretty much the only Superman moment is him flying that dreadnought up into space and throwing it away. So, you know, the story does work on that level. Like, at least Bendis is keeping the Superman appearances, the actual superpowers being used to a minimum. Everything else, you could swap Superman out and just think of him as, you know, random Joe Smo spy guy. And it all works, you know, he's got a disguise he put on himself, or the disguise Kate Spencer used was some crazy spy technology like Mission Impossible or holographic projector changing her face or, you know, whatever. All of that works on a level of just, hey, this is crime noir, this is spy, this is intrigue. But again, you throw Superman in and it just, he's the square peg in the round hole that doesn't fit. But again, if we just try to take it for what it is and read the story and enjoy it, it's not without its merits. It can be enjoyable. I just wish Bendis wouldn't do things that sabotage it, you know, like this crazy idea of this kryptonite, or the having Lois look like she's the one that can fly so he can make funny Peter Pan jokes. Those are the problems that I have with it, beyond just, okay, well, Bendis wasn't the right one. Crime noir story with Superman doesn't work. Like, I'll put those aside and I'll just say, okay, it might not have been what I would do, but at least it's something different and original, and I'll try to make the best of it. But when you're messing stuff up as simple as dialogue and the pacing of the narrative by throwing in this nemesis of my nemesis is my nemesis page, that's where I have a problem. Because now you're going beyond just, okay, it was an editorial decision to put him on Superman, and I think that was a mistake. Like, well, it doesn't matter what I think, because this is what we got and this is a story he wanted to tell. Okay, let me accept those two things and let me just read the story for what it is. But I don't even get to do that and enjoy it, because he keeps sabotaging himself by doing these little things that just pull you out of the story and make you realize that it's not well executed. So it's just frustrating, because I love Superman so much and I want this to be good. And I had hopes for when Bendis came over, even though I'm not the biggest Bendis fan. I mean, we're going to get through it. We'll get, you know, we know Bendis is not even on Superman anymore as I'm recording this. And I am trying to make the best of these, but I've got to be honest, when there's certain things that just don't work. And I'll be honest when things do work, because I think that the whole opening scene with the Kate Spencer imposter and Bones bringing the side of Bones, how much he cares about the DEO and the people that work there. That's a side of Bones that I haven't seen before. Maybe it's been shown before in Checkmate or something, but I had never seen it. And I thought that worked tremendously well. Excellent job. Great characterization there from Bendis. It does show that the guy knows what he's doing. He's Bendis for a reason, right? Even though recently people think that his work hasn't been as resonant as it was in the past. Maybe he's stretching himself too thin. I don't know. I can't speak to that. I haven't read a lot of his Marvel work because I've never been a big fan of his style of writing. The decompression and whatnot, but I'll give him credit here. The characterization and the storytelling and the dialogue itself, which I complain about in other parts of the book, that dialogue between Bones and Kate Spencer is great. Absolutely love that. I think it's done really, really well. And even even the Amanda Waller dialogue, as terrible of a character as I think she is, works well. And I love the gumption he gives Jimmy. Like, Jimmy, you know, just tells it like it is when it comes to Amanda Waller. He's not putting up with anything. Yeah, you could be Leviathan. You tricked Superman into bringing you here. Like, Amanda Waller is about to kick your butt, Jimmy Olsen, but he doesn't care. He's going to keep saying it. She tells him to stop taking it, her picture, and he doesn't care. He's going to keep taking her picture because he's Jimmy. And he's probably not even necessarily doing it from a sense of bravery, but more from a sense of Jimmy does what Jimmy thinks is right, no matter what. It's not that he's brave and he's standing up to the danger. It's that he's kind of naive and doesn't realize the danger that he's actually in. Which I'm fine. That characterization of Jimmy works for me. So there are things that Bendis does well, but I mean, at the end of the day, this is Action Comics. It's a Superman title, and the characterizations that he's not getting right in my mind are Superman and Lois, who arguably are the two most important characters. So that's where I kind of have an issue. But I know part of it is my bias because of how he messed with the relationship between Clark and Lois, which I'll never be okay with. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. I think next time we're back to talking about an issue of Superman. Let me just double check on that for you. Yeah, we're going to be actually Supergirl. We're going to be talking about Supergirl number 28 next time, followed by Supergirl number 29. So maybe I'll do those back to back and release them both together. And then we'll be back on Superman with issue number 11. And following that, we'll circle back around to Action Comics number 1011. I'm hoping to get these Superman Sundays out a little quicker for you guys. Start releasing multiples on Sundays, I hope, too. That way we can get caught up and cover the Philip Kennedy Johnson Superman in a timely fashion. So anyway, as always, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.